Next case is 0823, and Mr. Wiley, I'm sure, sorry, 0823-63 and 09170, Marcia A. Meyer versus Mario Mendenchik. Mr. Nash.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'm Joel Nash on behalf of the appellants, the Medanchiks, and A Custom Builders, and I would request to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Thank you. The majority of the courts in Ohio and in the rest of the country, for that matter, have held that compound interest should only be used when there's an agreement by both of the parties or a statutory provision. Here there was neither. The appellees point out in their brief four exceptions to this rule, which I believe are all readily distinguishable. The four exceptions are periodic payments of interest, prejudgment interest, wrongful withholding of payments, and evidence that both parties intended that compound interest should be applied. The periodic payments of interest is the Brummel case, which the 11th District relied on when they overruled the trial court. The Brummel case is misapplied in this case. The big distinction on this, in Brummel, this court ruled that when there's periodic payments, now this was a case where it was municipal bonds that called for periodic interest payments only, just interest, which we don't have in this case, any periodic payments of interest only, let alone periodic payments. With the bonds, they were supposed to be paid every 6 months. So the rate, it was payable every 6 months. In this case, we have a per annum. Per annum is typically simple interest, and it accrues annually, not necessarily payable. And in this case, it was just per annum accruing at a simple interest.
Counsel, I wonder, could you tell us just briefly how you believe the interest should be calculated, just in, not with numbers, but let me just take one of the notes here. The July 3rd, 1995, $20,000. Total principal and all interest is due and payable on or before, but no later than November 1, 1995. I assume it was not paid. So how would you go about calculating this in simple interest?
Well, it was at which rate note are you talking about?
13? This is 13%.
13% per annum it would accrue. When the note is paid, you would multiply by the years of 13% times however many years that would come to. Each year, it would not be added annually because it wasn't payable annually.
Would it? So that's a pretty simple way of doing it. I guess my question would be: it says the total principal and all interest is due and payable no later than November 1, 1995. Why would you not, and on November 1, 1995, with simple interest, calculate what interest would have been due at that point, add that to the principal, and then calculate simple interest on that total thenceforward until it's paid?
Well, that would be interest on interest. And if you did that, every note would become a compound interest note.
It says the interest is due and payable. The interest, all interest is due and payable. So that's when the interest becomes due, right?
Right.
And just like the principal.
And if it's not paid, then you file a suit, as was done here, and the interest continues to accrue. The appellee's contention that this is a free loan, it's not. It's what the parties bargained for. If the appellees wanted it to be compound interest, they should have put that in the notes.
Well, this is not compounding year after year. This is just at one point. You add the two together, and then you continue the simple interest.
You're suggesting at which point? At the point of judgment or the point of 1995?
At the point where it says it's due and payable, when it's due. All interest is due in principle.
Well, I believe that it wouldn't even accrue till the 95.
Right, November 1, 1995.
Okay, and at that point, if you're in breach, then, you know, Your Honor, this was a global deal which involved undivided acreage as well as three subdivided lots. The trial court voided the contract as to the undivided acreage because of a mutual mistake that he determined that both parties had, that there was more wetlands than either party contemplated and it couldn't be developed. The three subdivided lots had been built on, so he had to kind of piece this. The Medanchiks built their homes on those lots, on two of them, and they built another lot and a home and sold it for profit. The idea was they would continue to take lots from the undivided and divide it, build, sell to pay the notes. The whole deal went bad. But in 1993, the Medanchiks gave the mayors $120,000. The mayors have had this money all along. That's why the judge ruled that the $148,000 be returned to Medanchiks. Part of that was a supervision fee for the Medanchiks building the mayor's daughter's home. The notion that the mayors have been out this money the whole time, they're the ones who have been holding the money the whole time. If they would have paid, at the time of judgment, the Medanchiks were actually awarded more than the appellees were. If the appellees would have just paid that, then the Medanchiks would have had the money to pay it back. The only reason it wasn't offset was because A Custom Builders was involved, the Medanchiks company, and the Medanchiks signed the note personally. So because of legal entities, it wasn't offset. But if it had been offset, the appellees would have actually owed the appellants money at that point.
I understand this is a complicated case, and there's lots of facts involved in this, which probably leads to the standoff on this particular issue, which is why you're here. Were any of the notes paid when they were due? We have three of them at issue here, I believe.
Well, there was money. It depends where you consider that money went. That money was ordered to be refunded. The money was paid for the undivided property. Because of the money being held up there, it wasn't paid to the other notes, but it was the same party was holding the money. It was the mayors all along holding the money on that. So it's kind of splitting hairs to say whether it was paid or not. The whole deal fell apart, and even the trial court voided the whole deal and realized this was over $1 million deal that they were going to develop a whole, you know, a development that fell through because of wetlands and the inability to build. Mayors never
I take it none of the notes were canceled.
No.
All right. So whatever money somebody may have been holding, they never applied it or credited it to one of the promissory notes, correct?
They were not canceled because the subdivided lots were built on, and the Medanchiks still live there. This started out as a foreclosure case.
The one note, at least, the July 3rd, 1995 note for $20,000, also says the terms of the mortgage deed are incorporated herein. Does the mortgage deed provide anything for payment of interest?
Nothing. The interest was in the note that you're looking at, not on the deed.
So the mortgage, no provision in the mortgage dealt with that issue at all?
No, and there's absolutely no indication of compound interest anywhere, and that's what the trial court ruled, that there was no evidence that the parties intended to compound this. And for over 100 years, when there's a default, you pay interest. The interest accrues. It's never been compounded unless there was some wrongdoing, some wrongfully withheld. But that's not what happened here. It was just a mutual mistake.
Is there any disagreement about what the interest rate is? This one note has 13% per annum. Another one has 10% per annum. Are those facts in dispute, that's
no.
The rate to apply?
No, only the issue of compound versus simple. All the other issues in this case have been resolved either by court orders or by the parties eventually agreeing to set off. Assuming it's simple interest, this case has been settled. The only issue is if the court were not reverse the appellate court, which I think is wrong, to use Brummel to do this. And I think that's why the 11th District eventually ended up certifying the conflict here with 34 Corp.
Well, counsel, if you look at paragraph 21 of the Court of Appeals opinion, they cite Brummel and they say that they're adopting or they're following the proposition in that case that said where there's a contract with the interest at a specified rate annually, and when there's a default of the payment of the interest when due, the interest will be computed at the regular rate. That's the particular
in Brummel.
That's the particular point they're arguing here. What portion of that do you disagree with? Is it that this was not a contract for the payment of interest, or that the rate was not specified annually, or there was not a default of the payment when the interest was due? Because those seem to be the points on which the Court of Appeals has hung its opinion.
Yes, Your Honor, and you'll notice even in that statement, it was not compounded, it was at the regular rate. But this Brummel is different, that it ordered interest payments every 6 months.
The point was that case is talking about a general principle. That's the general principle just excerpted from that case. And what I'm trying to do is to see where you disagree with the application of that principle to this particular case.
Well, I disagree with that principle because with bonds, that's what people, it's about having a dividend every 6 months of a principal payment, of the interest payment, I'm sorry.
So you're saying that the principle is not applicable at all? You're saying it's a totally inapplicable principle to your case. Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry, I don't understand that.
I mean, it's a general statement of law that the Court of Appeals is relying on, but you're saying that in your particular situation, that principle does not apply at all.
That's correct. What they're saying is that if the money was to be paid every 6 months and that person would have had use of that money, they could have reinvested it. But in this case, it wasn't an agreed to be paid. It wasn't payable. It was only accrued per annum.
So that at some point, your distinction is that the frequency with which a payment must be made will dictate whether Brummel applies?
If there's a periodic payment ordered of interest only, that's a big distinction. Then if you look at the notes in our case, it is the principal is payable with interest accruing at a certain rate. It's not principal and interest payable annually, it's the principal with interest accruing annually.
So the obligor would be paying down the principal, and then once a year or on a date certain would just give a lump sum distribution of the accrued interest. Is that the way you envision it?
In which case?
In your case, that's what should have happened.
That's correct. When it was paid, the interest would be factored in. And the fact that there was a breach, then the lawsuit was filed and the interest would continue to accrue.
But you're saying that they would pay the principal periodically and just let the interest accumulate until the due date and then a lump sum distribution of that interest?
In this case, even the principal didn't have periodic payments.
So everything was due at one fell swoop, date.
That's
all
correct.
The principal and all the accrued interest was due on a date certain.
Correct, years down the road.
And you think that distinguishes it from Brummel because Brummel had periodic payments involved?
Absolutely, and also in Brummel, they considered that there was contempt of what was done with the payment, so there was wrongdoing. Every one of the cases—
So you think that the compounding is a punitive determination by the court?
Not necessarily a punitive, but to make it whole in that case, because they're out the money and there was a wrongdoing, they decided, they don't term it a punitive, but
It's a punishment.
Every one of the exceptions dealt with a wrongdoing, withholding money wrongfully. In this case, there was stays, orders placed where neither party could collect on their judgment. The mayor never paid Medanchik on the judgment, or this would have been resolved. I'd like to reserve the remaining time.
Thank you, Mr. Nash. Mr. Fitzgerald.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Tim Fitzgerald. I'm here on behalf of the appellees, Bob and Marcia Mayer. And on their behalf, I would ask that the court affirm the decision of the 11th appellate district in this case. Compound interest is the appropriate way of calculating interest in this case.
Counsel, I have the notes, and the notes certainly, you would agree, say nothing in them of themselves about compound interest.
Compound is not anywhere in the notes or in the mortgages.
Your client relies on an affidavit that says in paragraph 18 that it was never my intention that these debts would bear simple interest for the 10-year period, but that they would be compounded if they failed to pay the interest. That's what your client relies on as his intent.
There is an affidavit from Mr. Mayer that is to that effect, Your Honor.
Why is that not violative of parole evidence rule? How could that come in? Because that you've agreed is not in the contract. He is saying this was what I believe the contract to say, and that's parole evidence. How does that get in as evidence? I mean, let alone the fact the court didn't accept it.
Well, it is some evidence of what the party's intent was, and the case law.
It's parole evidence.
Well, even the 34 Corp case, which is the case that's supposedly in conflict with the 11th District here, says that compound interest does not apply unless there is some evidence that was the party's intent. And there is case law that we've cited in our brief where even though compound interest is not the term used in the note, that when there is evidence presented to the trial court that
maybe the trial court rejected your evidence, did it not?
The trial court did not accept.
So why is that before us? That's a factual finding by a trial court who felt it a self-serving statement, rejected it, let alone be parole evidence. So why is that any evidence before us?
We do not need that affidavit, Your Honor, to prevail here.
So you just rely on the Brummel case
principally,
to get you
and other principles. The attempt to distinguish Brummel on the basis that it involved periodic versus a default is really what the critical issue is in this case. The what triggers the obligation to pay interest on interest is the default in the payment of interest.
Counsel, before you go on to why, could you just tell us how you believe the interest should be calculated? Let's just take the July 3rd, 1995 note for $20,000. It was 13% per annum that was due and payable, all interest and principal, no later than November 1, 1995. So how would you calculate that under your theory?
Yes. As of November 1st, 1995, when that note came due, the amount that was due and payable to the mayors was $20,861.92. At that point in time, that is the amount that was due and payable. Subsequently, because it was not paid, there was a default. Applying the Brummel principle, which is the critical thing here, is the principle that Brummel stands for. And if you read the Brummel decision, one of the cases that they cite is a case called Ankletov versus Converse, which is an 1866 decision, which involved a very same scenario, a real estate transaction involving promissory notes in which there was a default. So this idea that Brummel only applies to bonds and periodic principal payments is not supported by even the Brummel decision.
Okay, so November 1, 1995, we have $20,000, I think you said
$861.
Right. Now what do you do?
And
what
would you do? At that point in time, you would begin to calculate interest at 13% per annum on that dollar figure every year. And at the end of the next year, November 1, 1997, if they did not pay that amount plus the intervening interest, that intervening interest would also be added into the principal amount.
Principal.
And you would continue to do this until it was paid. Now, remember, in this case, this money was due and payable for over 12 years before it was ever paid. So the Medanchiks had the benefit of that money for over 12 years when it was owed.
Don't the notes that add the interest into the principal or the compounding usually specify that? If the money's not paid at a certain date, the interest shall be added to principal and then and so forth. Isn't that usually specified in a note?
It can be, but what is significant here is that That was not what happened in even in the Brumo case. In Brumo, there is no language about compounding or adding interest, but that's what this court said because that is the way to make the aggrieved party whole.
So you essentially are asking us to expand Brumo to say that anytime there's a default, even though the contract specifies simple interest, from the point of default forward, it becomes compounded.
I think that's what Brumo holds, Your Honor. I'm not asking you to extend it. I'm merely asking that it be
There's
recognized.
There's a lot of case law that holds the opposite.
I'm sorry?
So there's a lot of case law that holds the opposite, centuries of case law that holds the opposite. So you are asking for expansion if you want us to apply that as a principle to any debt, once it's fixed, becomes compound interest. That is an expansion of Brumo.
And I think this court has expressed the willingness to do that when it recognizes that involving interest, that it will either abandon or modify previous decisions to accommodate the public policy of what interest is designed to do, which is compensate the aggrieved party. And the Royal Electric case is an excellent example of when this court has done just that. The court abandoned what had been commonly used as the liquidated versus unliquidated or the capable of ascertainment tests that were used to determine when interest became due. And the court in Royal Electric said that it clearly is calculated, interest is, at the point in time when the money is due and payable. And so it abandoned what had been what was viewed the majority opinion of other courts, including appellate courts in Ohio, that this liquid versus unliquidated or the capable of ascertainment test would be used. In that case, the court also said that they were abandoning what was perceived as a medieval notion that interest is evil.
Well, counsel, the 13% or whatever the agreed upon interest rate, does that stay fixed?
Yes.
And they don't go to, as the Brumel court states, the regular rate, which I'm not sure what that meant.
I would submit that the regular rate would be the rate that the statute that allows for the interest would provide for. And in this case, that statute is Revised Code Section 1343.02, which says that the amount that is due is the amount that's reflected in the instrument, the written instrument. So
they don't abandon that and just go with the statutory rate.
That is right. It would be unless the instrument didn't specify a rate, then the amount that's specified in the note would dictate both the amount that would be owed prior to the judgment as well as after the judgment. So it would remain the same. The 13% in that one note would remain the same as there's one note where there's 10% and another note where there's 12%. Those rates would remain constant throughout the entire calculation period of time until the note was paid.
You don't see any policy decisions or reasons to go with the compounding but do it at the statutory rate rather than the rate that is expressed in the instrument?
Well, the only reason is that because the recognized principle is that if there is a specified rate agreed to by the parties, that is the rate that will dictate. And I think that it would
right, except you're deviating from the method by which the interest is accruing pursuant to Brumel, where they introduce compounding when the instrument may not say compound.
Well, I don't think that it's inconsistent with Brumel because, again, Brumel didn't say compounding either. It was this court that said that in that circumstance, because there had been a default on the payment of both the principal amount of the bond as well as the interest that had accrued, that it would apply interest on the interest that had accrued. And that's all we're asking for here. We're not asking for the court to again, do anything different than what was done in Brumel.
If you want us to convert all judgments or all notes that become due and payable to a compound rate from thereafter, isn't that a public policy decision that perhaps should be made by the legislature as it sets interest rates and define what is interest and how interest can be calculated? Because you're really asking for us to convert any instrument, despite what the language says, into a compound interest.
I don't think that's necessary because Brumel was decided in 1944, and the revised code section that is applicable here was enacted in 1964. And I think it would be presumed that the General Assembly knew of the Brumel decision being out there, and by not attempting to in any way
but
modify
it. We had not yet extended it to any instrument.
Pardon?
We had not extended Brumel at that point to any instrument.
Well, as I said a moment ago, Brumel cites a case from 1866, the Anquetil versus Converse case, in which the instrument at issue there was a promissory note and a mortgage involving some real estate. So it's a principle that it goes beyond just the bonds that were applied in Brumel.
Counsel, the annual compounding is based upon the interest rate of per annum, as I understand your argument.
Yes, it is.
Just to explore the parameters of that, if this note had said 1% interest per month, then would the compounding occur on a monthly basis?
Yes, it
would. Or if it were per quarter or something like that?
As long as there was a default. Talking about calculating the accrual of interest prior to a date of default. But once there is a default, the Brumel principle is that at that point in time, in order to make the grieved party whole, is to allow for interest to be calculated on the interest that would accrue in the interim period of time between default and payment. So yes, it would at that point in time, again, recognizing that it would still have to comply with whatever usury laws there might
right.
be.
You couldn't
charge 20% interest per month.
I understand that. It's the per annum or whatever.
Right.
But
if you broke it down by month or by week or semi-annually, then that's the point in time where it would be, if it was not paid in that interim period of time, would be compounded at that point in time. Our position that the 34 Corp case does not require any different outcome here. Significantly, the Court of Appeals in 34 Corp did not address the Brumel decision, and the Court of Appeals here recognized that and said it was presumed that because Brumel was not cited anywhere in the 34 Corp case, that the parties had not made that argument. And therefore, its analysis is somewhat flawed. It may recognize the common recognized principle that simple interest will apply. But because Brumel wasn't addressed, I think that the precedential value of 34 Corp is lessened, and given the fact that here that's exactly the case that we do rely upon.
Mr. Fitzgerald, it seems to me I'm trying to still understand the Brumel principle here, and it's the computation at the regular rate that we're talking about, correct?
Correct.
And your position is that computation at the regular rate when you have interest specified means that it's compounded, whereas opposing counsel is saying computed at the regular rate just means simple interest. The principal remains steady, and the interest itself is added. You would add it to the principal and then allow the interest on the principal and the interest, correct?
Correct. I think the reference in the Brumel decision to the regular rate is the percentage rate, whether it would be in the instrument or the statutory rate.
But it still doesn't really help us that much in determining simple or compound, does it?
Well, not the reference to regular rate, but if you read the entire language, and it's at page 599 of the opinion, mm-hmm. It just reads that the claim of Relator Brumel for interest on accrued interest on his bonds must be allowed under a contract for the payment of interest at a specified rate annually, whereon there is a default of payment of such interest when due, interest on interest will be computed at the regular rate. And I think that regular rate language refers to the percentage. Is it 10%, 5%? And where you find that number will either be in the instrument itself. Here we've got 13%, 12%, and 10%. And if there is no specified rate of interest, then you have to go to the statutory rate and apply that.
And you're saying they are suggesting interest on interest is appropriate. That would make it compound.
That is correct, Your
Honor.
We've also cited some cases to the court in our brief that recognizes that the trend is to recognize that compound interest, at least in the modern financial transactions, is the recognized way of computing interest. And we would submit that this court should embrace that approach, because again, the court has recognized on numerous occasions that the public policy for interest in any case is to compensate the aggrieved party for the loss of the money, and to also recognize that the party who owes the money had access to that money for the period of time. It seems that the fairest and easiest way of accomplishing that public policy goal of interest is to allow for compound interest. And unless there's any other questions from the court, I would just conclude with the request that the 11th District Court of Appeals opinion be affirmed and that this case be remanded to the trial court so that the amount of compound interest can be calculated and judgment entered in favor of the mayors.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. Thank you. Mr. Nash, you've saved just a little less than a minute of your time.
What about that policy argument that simple interest does not fairly compensate them for the use of the money? Forget the set-offs and all the others. We're looking at a general principle of law.
If they would have bargained for it, modern day, it's in the contract. The mayors prepared this document. My client executed it. They had every right to bargain for that. You are made whole when you bargained for annual rate and didn't make it compound. They're made whole. If they would have, if compound would have been in the notes and they defaulted, then compound would make them whole. Nobody's saying that compound interest is evil or interest is evil. It just wasn't bargained for. And you need more than evidence with that affidavit of one party. You need the evidence that the party being charged with compound interest agreed to it. On Brummel, what was just read is that that case stands for contracts where it calls for payment of interest annually. That's why in the 10th District, in 34 Corp, didn't address Brummel. Brummel was addressed in Crockett, and Crockett awarded simple interest. The paragraph before, they mentioned the Brummel case, and they go on to award simple interest still. Brummel just has nothing to do with this case because of the big difference.
It
would be usurious.
You need to sum up. The red light is on.
I would just tell you that it would be a big injustice if this compound interest to be awarded here and set a bad precedent that it would do away with simple interest and the usury laws, and especially in a case where it was the mayor's had use of all the money this whole time, not my client, and we would ask for the court to reverse the decision of the 11th District.
Thank you, Mr. Nash. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.